We all want to do this or what?
Yeah, we're going to do it all right. Here we go. Oh, looks like that could be... Welcome, you guys. Happy New Year. Welcome to 2022, for crying out loud. Hard to believe. Here we are, another year past. And, wow, what a crazy way to end the year. Yesterday I heard Betty White died. That was kind of a bummer, but, you know, she was 99, and man, what a life she had. She even said, I watched one kind of interview with her, and she said, that she couldn't complain about anything about her life because it would be foolish. She's done pretty much everything that she wanted to do. I think she said, except for working with Robert Redford. I think that was one thing she wished she had done. But, I'll bet she wanted to hit that 100 too. Oh, and by the way, it was kind of funny. People magazine already had her on the cover. Betty White, lives to 100 or something, which I guess, you know, the timing of those kind of things, you got to get, you know, you got to get the information out there ahead of time and, you know, nobody really expects that that person's going to die between the time you get the magazine ready and the time it reaches mailboxes. But yeah, that's true. She did actually reach her 100th year. Hey, this is what we're going to do today. I'm going to ramble on about the same crazy stuff that our world is involved in right now, although I think there's some kind of interesting stuff to talk about. But if anybody wants to hear some music, let's just put it in the chat. And if you make it a YouTube, it'd be much easier. That way I can just double click on it and pipe it out over to, you know, pipe it over the air broadcast here. Otherwise, I'll just go on with my list of stuff. I wanted to kind of finish this story on the Great Barrington Declaration. Oh, yeah, let's do some personal stuff first, might as well. Vinny, I guess, is doing a little better. Anybody who doesn't know Vinny, you will eventually know Vinny. But he's doing better, getting ready to be transferred, so I think things are looking up for him, and that's good news. For me, holy cow, this cataract correction surgery, you know, with all the snow I have right now, it is so flipping bright. Whew. Can't wait till all this stuff melts and goes away. Or I have to just get used to wearing sunglasses. That's really the ticket. Because, man. So much more light is getting in these eyeballs right now. And what's kind of crazy is, you don't really notice the gradual loss of the amount of light that's getting in your eyeballs until you have like cataracts grow so slowly that you really don't notice how much light is being blocked from reaching your retina until it's instantly gone. And once it's instantly gone, wow, it is blinding. And the other thing is, I think it makes me really tired, like to, you know, kind of battle this, all this light coming in. Because I kind of been wanting a nap like every single day. Of course, it could be, you know, just because I want a nap too. The wind and cold and snow, it's kind of conducive to just kicking it in the recliner for an hour and closing my eyes and not doing anything. Oh, and while I'm speaking of not doing anything, a couple of things I am doing. One is, I started taking this Python class. I really like this website called Udemy, Udemy. And they offer all kinds of courses, and they're usually pretty inexpensive. And if they're not inexpensive, if you go to that site and you find a course that you'd like to take, and it's like $80 or $100 or who cares what, I've seen all of them go for $12. So what you do, if you create an account on there and you just add a course that you want to take to your wish list, you'll get a notification when that course goes on sale, and they all go on sale. Like, they all go on sale. And, man, you can learn all kinds of things. If you would like to learn about cryptocurrency, there's people on there. And I'm not saying they're experts. As a matter of fact, I'd say I've taken courses from people that were extremely good at teaching and passing on the knowledge they know. And I've taken some courses from, you know, a couple that were like, yeah, it was kind of an intro course. In fact, I just took a course from there, and I was thinking the guy, he knew what he was doing, but he also kind of seemed like he didn't know what he was doing sometimes, you know, but he showed you how to solve these problems, like go look for information and fix it, which was kind of interesting. You know, it was good. It was, so that was kind of a good learning experience too. But anyway, so I'm taking this Python course. Python, it's a computer language programming course on Udemy, and that's kind of fun. I haven't done any kind of structured coding for a long time. I had to stop and realize I was probably lying a little bit about that. but it's been fun, let's just say that. And it's kind of interesting because, you know, I'm one of these guys, I'm 64, I'm one of these guys that always is learning. Kind of reminds me of that Glengarry, Glenn Ross movie, Always Be Closing. My mantra is always be learning. So it's like when I get like so much knowledge into one thing, I just have to find out what the next thing is. What's my next interest going to be? And how am I going to learn it? And of course, the motivation for this time was I want to figure out how to make an IRC bot. And I know that some of them are kind of automatic. You just plug them in and let them do their thing. But I want to, that's not the kind of guy I am. I want to know how to make it do what I want it to do. So, of course, I'm taking this course because Python's a good language. I'm using Linux 100% of the time now. And Python fits in really well with that. And apparently fits in with IRC really well, too. So that's what I'm doing personally. And then I started looking at, you guys know that I'm a Sprout person. I love to encourage people to grow sprouts because they're delicious, they're nutritious, and it's easy. And today, I started learning about microgreens, so I talked to my daughter about that too, because she's really into good foods and stuff that's healthy for you. She's the one who's always in these CrossFit competitions. I'm pretty sure she outlifts everybody at the gym where she trains. That's men and women, so that's kind of crazy. And I think I pay attention to her, like, kind of like her physical health to make sure she's not hurting herself. I mean, she's a grown adult. She's 30-something. And, you know, she's had 4 kids, and she's in charge of her own health, but I kind of always watch to kind of give her any kind of information like, hey, maybe you ought to take it easy, you know, because your back and your knees and your hips and all that stuff has to last you the rest of your life. And I think she's pretty good at kind of taking care of herself too. But anyway, so I ran that idea past her. They just came up to do some work around here today. And I ran that idea by her about microgreens. And she goes, yeah, she goes, that would be really good. You know, because like we have been doing this kind of food thing for some years now, but we started getting a lot more serious in the last, I don't know, 8-10 years or something like that. I know, right? I know, too much studying. But, you know, it's just the thing. Anyway, but my point is, like, here's another food that you can get your hands on pretty easily, and you can grow in a really small space and provide yourself with some nutrition. And the really cool thing is that even right now, when it is freezing cold, snowy, winter time, not very much light outside, you can still grow sprouts and microgreens fairly hassle-free, it looks like. I can't say for microgreens because I haven't done it, but I'm obviously going to start doing it here in the next week or so whenever this stuff arrives so I can do it. But, I mean, you know, so many times I talk about, you know, growing your own food. And we get caught up on this idea that we need a huge amount of acreage to do that. And you really don't. Because if you can provide a little bit of food for yourself. Remember the apple tree and the applesauce I did a few months ago? I don't know how many gallons of applesauce we got off that four-year-old tree, but it was a ton. And now that the leaves are all off of that tree, I see that there's probably about another half a gallon of applesauce on that tree. We're not going to harvest them now, but it was amazing how many apples that tree put out for its fourth year. Just 4 years. It's crazy. I know it's a long time to look at now. You know, look at these people in Colorado, the big Colorado fires that happened this week. And, you know, it was a wind, it was wind, like these wind storms or wind of 100 miles an hour plus driving this fire through, I think, Boulder and some other towns there. But just think, those people had no idea that they were going to be out of their house. Like, it's not like now where we can kind of see inflation is going to kill us in the next year, and that the money that you make is not going to go as far next year as it did last year. So the people in Colorado just went instantly from having their home and whatever stuff they had to having basically nothing. I mean, most of them probably. Some people probably had some alternative plans, some other places to live. I mean, there's always a few of those people who have multiple residences or a winter or summer cottage that they go to. But for the most part, you know, hey, surprise, your house just burned down. And now what are you going to do? You know, so when I talk about, like, surviving, it doesn't have to be on a huge scale that you make your own food. You know, a lot of times you do, like, you harvest or take advantage of whatever's in season by canning it or drying it or freezing it or whatever. But still, pretty much all of those methods are perishable. And yeah, some things can happen to your seeds for microgreens and sprouts also, but the nice thing is, I mean, it's not like a ton of equipment. Like, you can pretty much grab a handful of stuff, throw it in your car, and leave and start growing food, and in, you know, 4 to 10 days you're going to have fresh greens, nutritious greens. I mean, you can't say that about tons of other food. Like, within a week, you can have some food that you're growing yourself. And yeah, maybe you'll want a ton more of it, right? But at least you could get something going. And that's why I'm such an advocate for sprouts and now microgreens. I can't wait to try it myself. But the point is, it doesn't take, like, a lot of money or a lot of stuff to do it. And it doesn't take a lot of time to get results. Yesterday your house could have burned down, and in a couple days you could have yourself a kit, and a week after that you could be growing some, you know, fresh greens. It's just a thought. I know it's kind of sort of a fictitious scenario, sort of, but I'm telling you, you know, any of these little things that you can do to provide for yourself is going to help out in the long run. I know that, like, we just grow sprouts because we enjoy them. One of my favorite things is a egg salad sandwich with a load of a mixed sprout variety on it. And I mean, I put far more sprouts on that sandwich than I do egg salad. And I like just a tiny bit of radish in my sprout mix because it has a little bite like radish does, but it's just a radish sprout. So you can imagine it's a little more concentrated. And I really like that. I also like a tomato, cucumber, and sprout sandwich with a little salt and pepper on it. It's delicious. I do try and avoid bread like crazy, though, so I don't have those sandwiches much. But I'll just grab a handful of sprouts and throw them in my salad or put them on my plate with whatever else I'm eating and just have it like a salad or like a garnish kind of. Wait, I don't think you eat garnish necessarily. Maybe you do. Me, I pretty much eat everything. So if it's on the plate, I'm basically, it's going to go in my mouth at some point, and, you know, we'll see if I actually eat it or not. I really haven't ever met a food I didn't like. So there's some foods that are way at the bottom of the list, but mostly I'll eat basically anything. All right. So what else we got? We covered some fires. Oh, I know. I have a pet peeve, man. So, you know, I'm a fan. I'm a sports fan. I like college ball, basketball, football, hockey. I like NFL, NASCAR, baseball, basketball, you know, the Bucks, the Brewers, the Packers, and NASCAR in general. Love it all. But I'll tell you what really kind of irritates me. So, like, for years I've watched the bowl games, and I've watched, you know, like, I watched the major bowl games and then some of the other bowl games, depending on who's in them. But I'm just a fan, so I just like watching them. And now, the way college sports is, you know, these guys end their regular season, and basically, if they're not in the playoffs, a lot of those guys just move on. If they're seniors and they're not coming back, they're gone. If they are going to another team, they're gone. If they, I don't know, for a multitude of reasons, they will just leave. So I'm watching, I don't know, some game the other night. I thought, oh, this is probably going to be a good game. And as I'm watching the pre-show, they start talking about the 22 guys that are no longer on the team. And I'm thinking to myself, no, wait a minute. 22 guys, I mean, that's like half the flipping team is now gone. So they filled in with whoever, you know, whoever's up next. Yeah, 22. I know. It's a lot. It's like half the team. I think there's 50 guys on a roster, maybe 60. And like, so one third to one half of them are gone. You know, before a bowl game. Now, yeah, I get it. Bowl games don't mean anything unless they're the playoff games for the national championship. But still, you know, it's like, it'd be interesting to still be competitive. And it's really kind of hard to, you know, because bowl games they're like a month after the regular season. So it's not like the guys are all tuned up, ready to play because they've been off for a month. I mean, sure, they've probably been practicing, but, and like I said, the bowl game really doesn't mean anything unless you're, you know, one of the four playoff teams, and then there's one, two, three bowl games that mean anything. So, yeah, that's kind of irritating. Hey, but while I'm on the subject, I might as well bring this up. I hate seeing like professional players like pretend like they don't understand the rules. Like if a guy is down on the ground and the football comes out, you don't pick it up and run with it. You can see he's clearly down and you're just kind of showboating and wasting time. And you know, the whistle's already blown and everything, so just stop and quit acting like, you know. Or even if a pass is thrown to you but actually hits the ground and you try and make it look like, you know, you caught it. There's so many cameras and so many angles these days that you're not getting away with that one. So stop it. Just stop it. You're making like hundreds of thousands to millions of dollars a year to be a professional athlete. Just act like it. It's not entertaining at all. It doesn't do anything for the game, in my opinion, and it just looks stupid. All right. Maybe that's enough about sports. Let me think if I have any other gripes about sports this time of year. Because there's like a ton of sports going on right now, ones that I'm interested in. Of course, the NFL is wrapping up. Basketball is kind of, you know, really getting started. Hockey's going. Let's see, baseball. Well, the college football, of course, is going to end next weekend with the college championship. And NFL will end in what, February, and then we roll into NASCAR and baseball shortly after that. So yeah, there's a lot of sports going on right now. It's kind of a fun time. Keeps you entertained. Maybe keep you from thinking about all the crap that we're dealing with. Unfortunately, no, it doesn't. All right, I wanted to return to. Oh yeah, my last gripe is about my last gripe, right? Not my last gripe that I don't normally cover is this gosh darn COVID graphic that every time media or somebody is talking about COVID, they show that little cartoon of the little COVID ball. And that thing, it doesn't exist. It's just somebody's fictitious rendering of what COVID, air quotes, is. And it's so funny to tell people, yeah, that's not what COVID looks like at all. We don't even know what COVID looks like, but that's not it. So whatever that little fancy ball is, maybe it's supposedly a cell with COVID attached to it or whatever, stop using it. It's stupid. Let's see what order we're going to go in. So last week I talked about the Great Barrington Declaration. And I was talking about how Fauci and Collins, and by the way, in the future, I think I'm just spelling Fauci, Fauxci. I was going to nickname him Foul Fauci, but actually, if you just spell it with an X in there, I think that's perfect. Fauci, Fauxci. So, in all of your communications from now on, if you just do that for me, that'd be awesome. Anytime you write about Fauci, let's just put that X in there. Kind of makes it perfect. It fits him perfectly. Anyway, I was talking about the Great Barrington Declaration. And then actually at the time, I didn't really understand what it was. But I mean, I kind of, in general, understood what it was. But I took a deeper look at it to see, and there was a couple reasons I did that. One is because Fauci and Collins referred to the people who kind of wrote and conspired, I don't know if that's a correct term, co-authored the Great Barrington Declaration as fringe epidemiologists. And I was saying at the time that these fringe epidemiologists were actually, you know, they were actually epidemiologists who actually got hired on their merit, versus Fauci, who has risen to the heights of glory in the federal government without, you know, not the smartest, not the brightest bulb in the pack, but when you're in the federal government, you can, hey, you can rise to great levels. Just ask me. I had a great career, but I was certainly not the greatest dentist in the world, no doubt. But anyway, so Fauci called these guys fringe epidemiologists. So I went back to read the Great Barrington Declaration to see what it was all about. And then lo and behold, today, those guys actually kind of came out with a response. And I hope to God I put that in here. Let's see. Oh, yeah, I did. Good. Okay, so here's the deal. So last week I was talking about how in an email, Collins told Fauci that this proposal from the three fringe epidemiologists seems to be getting a lot of attention, adding that there needs to be a quick and devastating published takedown of its premises. I don't see anything like that online yet. Is it underway? And then Fauci went out and found a bunch of editorials. Remember, I talked about this last week. So Fauci went out and got a bunch of commentary, editorials, basically what I'm doing right now. And he referred to those which supported his methods as a takedown of these actual epidemiologists who could point to actual figures, although they really didn't, but they had some figures going on at the time that indicated that there was some serious problems with lockdowns and mask wearing and the things that we were doing to society, and that these fringe epidemiologists thought that it was pretty serious. So the three fringe epidemiologists are these guys. Dr. Martin Kulldorff, at the time a professor of medicine at Harvard, and you can think what you want about institutions of higher learning and people who were there, but it was Harvard, okay? It's not like it was, University of Oregon or, you know, whatever. It's Harvard. So this guy is obviously not a slouch. Dr. Sunetra Gupta, an epidemiologist at Oxford. I'm telling you, it's these are the fringe epidemiologists. But what's sad about it is because Fauci is like given some kind of, I know, inherited power because he's in the federal government, that he is actually making fun of these guys from Oxford and Harvard. And who's the other guy from? Dr. J. Bhattacharya, an epidemiologist at Stanford University Medical School. And Fauci's making fun of him. Oh, my God. And the sad thing is, like, because mainstream media, I mean, at the time, do you remember, they were falling all over Fauci like he was Barack Obama or something. You know, and like, I remember people saying that he should be Man of the Year, you know, People Magazine Man of the Year, all this other crap, and Sexiest Man Alive, and just stupid stuff. And here these three guys from Oxford, Harvard, and Stanford are just slouches because Fauci says they are, and then actually doesn't even enter into some kind of scientific discussion with them. Like, doesn't even, like, consider, hey, well, let's look at the data, the real data, and see what it says. No. He just picks up on some editorial commentary that other morons put out, probably guys from places like, you know, Lewis and Clark here in Oregon, or I don't know, you know, some other goofy institutions of higher learning. Or, and some of them were just magazines like Wired Magazine, and I don't want to misspeak. Why not? Let me see what magazines that he quoted. Dang it. I'll get to them eventually. I'll come back to them. I know they're in here somewhere. Oh, they're in this article. That's why. Okay. Let's just see. Oh, that's a lot of dead air, wasn't it? Oh, my goodness. Oh, I hate that. I should have made a little better notes. And, yeah, you could actually hear my papers flipping, too, couldn't you? That's okay. No big deal. The bottom line is some of the articles that Fauci pointed to as, you know, his refutation of this Great Barrington Declaration, they were just from magazines, just from magazines, you know. They weren't from, you know, published scientific studies. They weren't from a collection of statistics that anybody collected and then actually, you know, actually studied to see if there were, if there was more mental health issues, if there were fewer children getting other vaccinations, or if there was more or less health problems in the population, if people were losing their jobs, you know, et cetera, et cetera. All this stuff that we've seen go on with this pandemic, nobody in those articles actually pointed to any facts or any studies. It was just their opinion. It was opinion. And so Fauci used opinion papers to refute these three fringe epidemiologists from Harvard, Oxford, and Stanford. Now, so what did those guys actually say? I thought this was interesting. Oh, this is fun. I was kind of on a roll. Hang on. I'm getting it. See, usually I have these articles like right in front of me on the big screen. And I can just click on the links and go right to the article. But no, I printed them up today. Because I don't know why, but I just did. Dang it. Okay. Oh, yeah, here it is, here it is, here it is. Okay. So I'm just going to read a couple comments that these guys talked about today in their response to Fauci and Collins. Now, remember, like at the time when these guys wrote the Great Barrington Declaration, and they had... they had 50,000 scientists and over 800,000 members of the public sign on to it with them. But even at the time that they wrote this, there was actually no vaccine available. When the Great Barrington Declaration was written, was far before there was a vaccine available. So you would think that true scientists who were truly interested in the public's health, and I mean the public's health in general, that they would have considered some of these things, but they didn't. So here's what Kildorf and Bhattacharya had to say. The key scientific fact on which the Great Barrington Declaration was based, a more than thousandfold higher risk of death for old compared to the young, meant that better protection of the old would minimize COVID deaths. At the same time, opening schools and lifting lockdowns would reduce the collateral harm to the rest of the population. And remember, what we're seeing now is, number one, like, IQ levels are way down. Suicide in young people is way up. And just kind of being able to socialize and, you know, learn how to be human is going down. Anyway, these guys said the declaration received enormous support. Oh, I already read that part. Second, we wanted to spur a discussion among public health scientists about how to better protect the vulnerable, both those living in nursing homes, where about 40% of all COVID deaths have occurred, and those living in the community. We provided scientific proposals for focused protection in the Great Barrington Declaration and supporting documents to spur the discussion, though some in public health did engage civilly in productive discussions with us. In this aim, we had limited success, which is really crazy. Fauci's in charge of the National Institute of Health, which is one of the departments in the Public Health Service. Why wouldn't he be concerned with the overall health of the entire nation? Now, remember, I talked about before that in Fauci's, whatever, 50 years, the actual health of the nation has declined significantly, with more than a 50% increase in chronic illnesses in our country, because Fauci has basically failed at his job. And for some reason, we look at him as some, well, no, we don't. But a lot of people look at him as some, you know, some kind of a saint. Lockdown harms have affected everyone, with an extra heavy burden on the chronically ill, on children for whom schools were closed, on the working class, especially those in densely populated inner cities, and on the global poor, with tens of millions suffering from malnutrition and starvation. For example, Fauci was a major advocate for school closures. These are now widely recognized as an enormous mistake that harmed children without affecting disease spread. In the coming years, we must work hard to reverse the damage caused by our misguided pandemic strategy. And you know what is really also kind of crazy about that? That might have escaped me already. Like, right in mid-sentence. No. You know the reason why it says tens of millions suffering from malnutrition and starvation? Is because we've removed so much of the workforce that would actually harvest all these crops that, you know, that first world countries grow and have excess of and provide to third world countries. So we basically cut off their food supply. You know, and it was not that great before. It wasn't like, you know, it wasn't like there was no starvation before this. And now we have just, like, compounded that problem worldwide. Now, I'm sure Fauci doesn't care about the rest of the world. I mean, he doesn't care about the United States and the population of the United States being healthy, obviously. Or he would have spent more time actually doing something about the chronic illnesses that have increased under his watch at the NIH in the last 50 years. But he doesn't. All he has cared about is making sure everybody gets this damn vax. And that's not been the answer. I mean, so last week I talked about, if you look at the curve of the rate of increase or the rate of new COVID cases, you can see that we've basically done nothing to this pandemic, and that people have continued to die. I mean, thankfully, finally, it looks like the Omicron variant, if it really truly is such a thing, is going to provide a lot of people with natural immunity, and it's not killing a lot of people, which is awesome. So that's good, and maybe that's going to be the road to the end of this whole thing. It's kind of funny, too. I was reading the Rest in Peace Pandemic of the Unvaccinated article, and that'll be in the show notes, too. And it was really funny because it pointed to a lot of the things that I'd been talking about the past few weeks about, like, the NFL fully vaccinated teams having 20-something players that were on the COVID list, the cruise ships who now... the CDC is saying don't take a cruise no matter what your vaccination status is because it's too easy to get COVID on a cruise ship because their vaccine is so damn good. Yeah, their vaccine is so good that you can't get on a cruise ship if you're fully vaccinated and boosted because the potential for you getting COVID is so high on a cruise ship. That's how good their damn vaccine is. It's crazy to me. And I've said for a few weeks now, I think the good news is people are waking up. Like every day, I think there's more and more people that are just like, hey, I want to know the truth about whatever is going on because I've obviously been lied to for the past now going on 2 years. And I want to know what the truth is, or I'm willing to listen to you, you know, conspiracy theorists over on Real Liberty Media and find out, you know, if what you've been saying is true, you know, or some of these people on the internet who've been saying it for years, basically. I was just trying to think of what I just saw. Oh, yeah. So after December 31st, 2021, the CDC will withdraw the emergency authorization of the PCR test for COVID-19 testing. The CDC finally admitted the test does not differentiate between the flu and COVID virus. This explains the difference, the disappearance of flu cases in the U.S. in 2020 and across, you know, throughout the entire world. And it also inflated the COVID cases, as Dr. Fauci and the D.C. elites knew would happen. Now, so think about this. So every single thing that has been done since day one of this supposed COVID outbreak has been done based on a false narrative and based on false numbers. Every single thing that has been done by people has been done based on false numbers. I think a ton of us knew in the first few months, especially after the first 6 months or so when there were no flu cases, and it's like, hey, it's flu season. Flu didn't just disappear. Now, we've been saying this for over a year. The flu didn't disappear. Where did it go? Where did the numbers for the flu go? Well, now the CDC is admitting that, well, the test can't tell the difference. So, but the CDC needed those numbers to drive their agenda. They needed it to look even worse than it was. So, of course, just eliminate the possibility that flu was killing some people and make it all COVID deaths. So just think, every single person who has lost their life either to COVID or to overdoses of fentanyl and opioids or to depression or to suicide or lost their jobs and became homeless, you know, now they're suffering from other mental illnesses, all the people who had cancers that they knew of and couldn't get treatment, people who couldn't get diagnosed with new cancers, people who couldn't access care because, you know, we needed the hospital beds for whatever. All of that stuff has been done under false pretenses because the numbers were absolute lies. The tests were complete failures. The vax is a complete failure. And I think, I don't know what you guys did last night for New Year's. I'm not interested in staying up till midnight to celebrate a new year, I can tell you that. And I was asleep by 5 after 10 Pacific time. But I did watch a little bit because I kind of like to see like the celebrations around the world. So I was kind of cruising some channels looking for different celebrations. And I came across the Nashville celebration. Now, I don't know if you guys happen to stumble into that and watch it for a few minutes. I got to tell you, it was probably the most entertaining thing I'd seen in a while. And not just because, you know, I'm a redneck and I love country music along with, you know, some classic rock and some other stuff. But because Nashville was just giving a gigantic middle finger to the entire COVID process, to like everybody who is involved in the lockdowns and the restrictions and the mask wearing and the social distancing. And they weren't being like coy about it. I mean, they were literally like, you know, yeah, we're, you know, here in Nashville, we're done with this. Even one of the people on there said at one point, you can look around, you look as hard as you want, you're not going to see a mask in here at all, which I absolutely loved. But, I mean, maybe it's got to be. I mean, I do not want to be sitting here next year talking about how we're going into year three or we're ending year three of this ridiculousness. And the only way it's going to happen is for people to wake up and just refuse. And I'm kind of worried about some countries, man, like Australia. I mean, they are like the jackboot thugs down there. Australia, which is really kind of crazy when you think about it, right? Hang on. Time to refresh. Because wasn't Australia kind of where they sent, like, I don't know, prisoners or something? Was that Australia or was that somewhere else? Wasn't it kind of where they sent all people doing time? So if you imagine, like, all these people, you know, in Australia were originally convicts. Let's just say, I don't really know if that's true. Okay, let's not say it. But jiminy Christmas, man, how do you treat your fellow citizens like that? I just don't understand. I, you know, like you see, where was it? Was it in New York City where the cops were going into offices and, oh my God, it was true. They sent prisoners there to clean up the mud. I bet that takes a long time. That place is huge. But was it New York City where the cops were just going into restaurants and like arresting and removing people who weren't obeying the mandates, whatever mandates they have in New York? I mean, I don't understand how, like, I can't even imagine that happening here in Sheridan, Oregon, in my community, or let's say in my county, because I mean, it's not like I know these sheriffs by name, but I've seen them personally. Like, luckily, we don't have any city cops here. We just have county and state cops because it's a little place out in the middle of nowhere. I mean, we can't afford a cop, which is why I carry a gun. Anyway, but I can't imagine that guy living in this community. I mean, Yamhill County is fairly big, you know, it's like other counties, it's a huge area, and that guy, I'm sure, lives probably in Yamhill County, or Polk, one of the two, Polk or Yamhill, and he's going to, I mean, he's, you know, could you imagine that guy, like, arresting somebody for not wearing a mask, because he's in a store, or, you know, somebody goes in a restaurant and they're not following the mandates and this Yamhill County sheriff is going to show up. I mean, you would be just look at him and go, hey, John, what, you know, like, what's up? And I can't imagine that the guy would be like on the side of the government. And I mean, luckily, like when there was all this kind of gun grabbing going on earlier in the year and people, I don't know if you guys know this and if it was nationwide or just within the state, but Oregon had some, you know, was trying to pass some laws about some guns. And man, this county was like, hey, screw you. We're going to pass a law before you pass your law that says, you know, we're not going to abide by your stupid law. I mean, that's the kind of county that Yamhill County is. It's just like, yeah, no, we're not doing what Portlanders say. That's the bottom line. Yeah, Portland, Salem, and Eugene, you guys can do, you know, to yourselves what you want to do to yourselves. We're not playing. We're going to carry our guns, and we're going to arm ourselves. And yeah, if you come in my house, you're getting shot. And if I see you, you know, getting ready to shoot somebody else in town, yeah, you're going to get shot. Yeah, I'm going to have my gun in my car. Yeah, I'm going to be as legal as I can, but I'm still going to have it. I'm still going to have it. That's the bottom line. But I just can't imagine, like, that kind of stuff happening here. But when you get into places like these huge concentrations of populations, these huge metropolitan cities, nobody knows anybody. I mean, it's not John coming to arrest you out of the restaurant because you took your mask or you didn't wear your mask to go to the bathroom. It's dude in a uniform who doesn't know you from Jack, and he's got, you know, a few thousand other officer buddies, and they don't give a crap about you. They're going to do what the governor tells them to do, what the mayor tells them to do, because that's who signs their paychecks. You know, out here, you know, we elect a sheriff, and, you know, all those sheriff deputies are paid, you know, by county funds. And we see them all the time. There's not that many of them, and there's not that many of us. So, you know, it's not like they're unknown. It's not like they're just a guy in a uniform. I mean, you see these guys all the time, and there's not that many of them. So, anyway, oh, yeah, so I'll be doing, I wanted to make sure I didn't miss something that I really wanted to cover this time. Oh, that story's going to be next time. Oh, yeah, I was going to talk about this whole, wow, not much time. I'm going to get this in really quick. There's no such thing. I don't do anything quick. Which is kind of fun. I was going to talk about this thing they're calling scientism now. And scientism is exactly the result of this kind of idea that has been going on for a long time now. And I bet you can't even imagine how long this idea has been going on. But remember when they started making math problems? Like the answers to math problems didn't matter because it didn't matter that you got the answer right. It mattered that you tried really hard. And I call it, so my definition would be something like this, like science would be 2 + 2 = 4. Whereas scientism is like this. The science 2 + 2 = well, you worked really hard to get the answer, so whatever you answered is worthy. So when that happens, then you get people, segments of the society, believing that these answers are worthy, when in fact they are absolute lies and will not help actually solve any problem in any real way, except maybe make you feel better about getting the wrong answer. And you won't actually figure out that nobody gives a crap about your feelings in the real world. What they actually want is real answers to solve real problems. But the problem is this kind of thinking, that the wrong answer could be worthy, has basically led to this belief that scientism is factual. And I think it's one of the reasons why we have so many people right now who just will take at face value what somebody tells them. It doesn't even have to be Fauci. It could be anybody. You know, so many people, even my daughter was saying today, that there's so many people out there that won't question anything. If some rapper or some rock star or some celebrity or their favorite podcaster just says whatever, they'll just take it at face value because so-and-so said it. And that so-and-so could have zero credibility as far as scientific knowledge and statistics goes, but because they said it, it must be true. And there's no kind of desire to actually, you know, go get the truth and question whatever is being said. Oh, guess what? Time is up. Hey, but it was fun. I'll be doing a show Wednesday night. You never know what's going to be on that one, but it should be fun, at least for me. I'm always having a good time. Thanks for joining me. Happy New Year, you guys, and I will see you Wednesday.